And it's 22 minutes after the hour. It's a Tuesday morning, a transcendent Tuesday, and Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas, which is, what would you call Garden Valley? Is it a village? Is it a hamlet? It's not, is it a municipality?
It's not a municipality. Uh-huh. We did have our own post office at one point in time, and mm-hmm. then that got transferred to Lyndale, which was is a bigger city.
Yeah, that is.
It's just a community. I mean, it's just a bunch of houses and farms and cows. And
well, it's a beautiful place. Out, and all kinds of Christian ministries headquartered in that area, too. That impressed me. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and a regular visitor to us, a special guest, our only biochemist on staff here at Broken Road Radio. We talk about creation, the biblical story of creation, and about the science in particular that supports the biblical story. And Don found an article. This comes from the Institute of Creation Research. And Don, the operative word in this article is control, which scares me a little bit. It automatically takes me back to decades ago when I had my first American Express card. And every month I'd get a piece of mail from the Board of Control, which I thought was a particularly riveting. Is that a government agency that I've never heard of? Who's the Board of Control? I'm going to open this. This is not junk mail. This is serious stuff. And inside would be a coupon from American Express or some such thing. They no longer call themselves the Board of Control, but control still has an awesome meaning to me, kind of intimidating, the word. And it's connected with the concept of homeostasis. Explain that. What does that word mean?
Well, if you break the word down, homeo is the same, and stasis means you're not moving or you're not changing.
Like static.
So you kind of stay in one place. And where this is important, because we're talking about biological systems and engineering principles, and can we use engineering principles to describe what goes on in a cell, for example, to keep the cell in homeostasis, to keep the cell or an organism. Let's take, maybe it'd be easier to describe that as an organism, because the temperature, your internal temperature in your body is in homeostasis. Unless you get an infection, and then instead of your temperature goes up, because the increase in temperature is good to fight off infections.
And the important part, that's a great example, because you don't need to tell it to do that. You don't need to take something. Your body does that automatically, doesn't it?
It's automatic, yes. So there's a lot of automatic systems. There's a lot of automatic systems in the cell. There's a lot of automatic systems happen throughout your body. And so, but something perturbs the system to cause that change to occur. So in this case, the example that I'm using, what perturbs the system is the inflammation that results from an invading organism, whether it be a virus or whether it be a bacteria. Whatever is invading the body, your system is triggered through a cascade of reactions, by the way. Antibodies are involved, and T-cells and all kinds of stuff are involved in order to perturb the system to raise the temperature. And, of course, after the foreign invader is taken care of, then your body comes back to normal temperatures, normal 98.6 instead of 103 or whatever it was when you had mm-hmm. had the infection.
It tries to cook the invading cells, doesn't it?
Yes, it's an increase in temperature increases mm-hmm. Chemical reactions. And so when you're trying to chew up, for example, foreign material, you might want to speed that process up. And so your body heats up. And then, because we don't feel good when our bodies are at, let's say, 102 or 103, we the body says, I can only do this for so long, because I've got to get my body back down in temperature in order to, you know, be normal again. And so its internal systems are saying, hey, you know, it's great to fight this infection, but let's get this infection under control and bring the temperature down to our normal limits. And it's quite efficient at doing that. And that's just one example. You know, there's oxygen in your blood. That's in homeostasis. And if it wasn't, then we either would have too much oxygen or too little oxygen. And too little oxygen, we know what that causes. You know, we can pass out if there's not enough oxygen going to the brain, for example. So there's systems upon systems upon systems in our body to keep things in control.
Can we call them reflexes? Would that be a proper use of the word? I'm thinking of, you mentioned oxygen. What makes you yawn? I mean, you don't think, I think I'll yawn. It just happens. Isn't that a response to a need for a deep breath or more oxygen for some reason?
Yes, it could be. I'm not sure what the mechanism of yawning is, but there are just so many. Let's kind of change the subject a little bit, but mm-hmm. it's the same principle. It's feedback systems. So the basic principle in engineering, especially with automated systems, you know, we have a lot of automated systems in our world today. In the engineering world, in the electronic world, we've got, your car is run by a computer nowadays. It's not just a simple carburetor. I was talking to a young fellow yesterday who works for me, and we were talking about his car, and the acceleration wasn't acting right, and he was going down the highway, and he had his foot on the accelerator pedal, but his car was only going 20 miles an hour. And I'm saying, oh, that's your potentiometer. That's your variable resistor that now controls the speed of your car. It used to be that your speedometer, your gas pedal, was attached to a cable. That cable was attached to your carburetor, and the more you pushed the pedal down, the butterfly on your carburetor and the throat of your carburetor would open up, giving you more air, which would pull in more fuel through the Venturi effect and speed up your automobile. Not so anymore. Everything is run by electronics. And so nowadays, you press on your accelerator, you change a little potentiometer, which is a variable resistor, which changes the voltage on the system, and it tells the computer, oh, the voltage has changed, so now I've got to open up the fuel injectors in order to give this car more gas, if you will, and the car speeds up. So his potentiometer, his variable resistor in his car, was acting up, and it wasn't giving the right signal in order to make the car speed up. So that's just one example of a controlled mechanism. It's not necessarily bringing the car in homeostasis, but it's telling the computer, hey, this fellow wants to speed up for some strange reason. And so it then gives the right signals to the other components of the car to operate properly.
Feedback.
That's the thing. It's automatic feedback. Another example would be that you would, for example, I'll take a very simple example. Any of us guys who's worked on your toilet knows that from time to time, you have to change components inside. And one of the components is the valve. Mm-hmm. So it has a float on it. And when the water level gets to a certain place, it shuts off the valve. That's a feedback mechanism, right? Because you don't want the water just to keep flowing, because if it kept flowing, then you'd have water all over your floor, and that wouldn't work very well. And sometimes we do when the valve doesn't work properly. So when the feedback mechanism doesn't work properly. And but that's just a very, very simple, simple example of the extremely complex feedback mechanisms that we have in our cells and in our bodies, in our system, if you will. So this one engineer who specializes in those type of things said, I'm going to look at biological systems, and I'm going to see if engineering principles and the feedback mechanism is one of the fundamental, it's called integrated feedback control, is one of the fundamental regulatory strategies in engineering. Without it, we wouldn't be able to design automated systems. So he uses, and it's the mathematics can get quite complex, especially if you can imagine that there's many, many components that must talk to each other, and in order to control a system, the mathematics just really gets hairy. So he apparently is a good mathematician as well. Good engineers are usually good mathematicians. And so he looked at a biological system, and he starts modeling it with mathematics. What he finds out is that the control mechanism in the biological system that he's studying is so precise that there is only one solution to his equations. That they're normally in these types of things, you've got fixed constants, or you've got constants or constant variables. You have to determine what the constant needs to be, what the value of the constant needs to be, and the value of the of other parameters needs to be in order to make your system work. So whatever this, and it doesn't, the article doesn't say which system he was working on, but whatever the system he was working on in the biological system, he found only one solution. And the values were so precise that he was astonished. Well, this points to the fact that our biological systems were not just randomly slapped together and it just happened to, things just happened to fall in place. What that points to is that the biological is so well tuned that there's only one solution to the system to make it work.
By the way, I've got a link to the article that we're discussing in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if anybody would like to follow along. So, Don, what we're saying is he took formulas, mathematical concepts from the world of physical engineering, cars, machines, robots, all that stuff, and applied it to biological processes and found out that it comports with physical engineering, that now it's the same principles involved in what's in essence chemical engineering.
Right, in a very complex chemical engineering problem, if you will, because there's systems upon systems upon systems in the biological realm, which he, after doing many, many experiments, and unfortunately this article doesn't say exactly what he was doing, but he had to use very complex mathematics to describe it. And it wasn't just like the on-off switch, or it wasn't like the valve in your toilet, for example. It was like having multiple valves, multiple feedback systems. If one value of one component, for example, raises too high, then that sends another signal in order to shut off something else, so that things come back into homeostasis.
So somehow this all ties in with evolution, and it's a fascinating concept that I guess would not be admitted to or recognized by a true evolutionist.
Well, here's what the evolutionists would say. They would say, "Oh, yeah, that's very interesting. So obviously we evolved. There was, a lot of trial and error went into the process in order to figure out what the ideal negative feedback mechanisms needed to be in order to have the system work. So of course, the system is there, it's working, everybody is happy. So obviously evolution is responsible for putting it all together. Now that's just nonsense.
Well, let me take another slant on this thing. It's like saying that the only variable is life or death here. So if an organism can't adapt to a changing circumstance, it dies. If it can adapt, then it lives. And therefore, its offspring will also have the same components that allow them to live. So as the environment changes, those unable to adapt die off, those able to adapt continue. And that's basically the evolution concept, isn't it?
Well, that's part of the concept. That's the environmental pressure that you put on an organism, not you, but the environment puts on the organism, creature, if you will, in order to stimulate change. And those that have the correct mutations to allow for changing, so the evolutionary story goes, will survive, and those that don't won't, and so they die off, and those that survive then have the mutated DNA, because it all goes back to the library that's in the center of your cell, right? Mm-hmm. And so you now have mutated genes that will help you in the new environment that you find yourself in. The problem with that is multitude, and we've talked about some of them. Mutations don't create positive, changes in an organism. After, studying mutation upon mutation upon mutation, mutations are either neutral, that is, they don't seem to have an effect on the organism. The organism still survives, but, they don't have the same DNA sequence that they did before. That's at best. At worst, the organism dies, or the organism is weaker and is crippled in some fashion and doesn't survive. So the mutation argument is not a very good one. And we found now that there are points in your DNA that can change very specifically depending on the environment. This is another article in ICR that you can look up, but there are, instead of being random, you would expect mutations to be random throughout the DNA. Instead of being random, there are points within the DNA that are allowed to change in order to change in a response to an environmental change. That does not speak of randomness. That speaks to order. And that speaks to, I wonder if this was designed like this in the first place. And the answer, of course, is yes, it was designed like this in the first place, because we and organisms had to survive in different environments. We can survive in the coldest parts if we want to. We have to build shelters and things like that, but we can survive in the coldest parts, or we can survive in the hottest parts here on Earth. So we could populate the Earth as we were commanded to do by God multiple times if we wanted to. Now, are there regions of the Earth that are more temperate and more, favorable to life? Well, of course there are. Deserts, even those things survive in the desert. It's a rough life, and you got to protect yourself during the heat of the day. You go to a desert at night, and there's all kinds of animals that come out. At night, lizards and all kinds of stuff that come out at night. If you've ever been to a desert at night, you'll see the amount of wildlife that there actually is Whereas if you travel through a desert during the day, not so much. You know, you're not gonna find a lot of creatures out in the heat of the day. I mean, same with us. I mean, we were talking about the temperature earlier before we came on the air. And, you know, when it starts getting up to 95, 97, over 100, not many of us are going to venture out in that temperature, and certainly not going to cut our grass or edge our lawns.
Now you tell me.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be doing that.
Okay, thank you. I'll use that as an excuse next time.
But anyway, you see, our systems are so well designed, and that's the point of the article, is that our systems are so well designed, you can use engineering principles, you can use chemistry, you can use the basic sciences and engineering principles to describe cells, but you have to use very complex systems to describe it, because it's not a simple system. It's not a simple on-off switch. There are multiple switches that get flipped, and depending on what the stimulus is, determines what switches get flipped on, when they get flipped on, when they get flipped off, and there's a tremendous amount of feedback mechanisms that control the whole thing.
Okay, I've got a question. This just popped into my head then. The difference between a built-in ability to adapt to changing environments. I mean, that makes a whole lot of sense to me. But you're saying that evolution is saying that changes occur, but they're always detrimental in some way.
Evolution would say, no, that changes do occur, and they're beneficial. What the science has showed that just random mutations within the DNA are at most neutral. That is, the organism still survives, and there doesn't appear to be any negative effect. But at worst, negative. And the organism, if it's a fly, for example, a fruit fly, its wing is all messed up, or it doesn't have a leg, or something's mm-hmm. wrong with it, that it's not the same anymore, and it's actually detrimental to the organism.
So the control and feedback mechanism that's built into us, does that necessarily involve DNA changes?
Oh, no. What it could, for example, involve expressing different proteins and enzymes based on environmental changes. So you have communication that goes from the outside of the cell, for example, into the cell, and that then ultimately gets to the DNA and says, okay, turn this gene on. We don't need this gene unless this happens. And so the signal comes in, the gene gets turned on, but it only gets turned on for the period of time that it's needed in order to correct the out of balance system. The overstimulation, for example, as we were talking about before, when you have an infection, and you've got cytokines and various chemicals that are being released, and
that would be a process that is not recognized by evolution. Then they would say simply the organism, once adapted, is changed and can't adapt back.
Right.
Gotcha. Yes.
Or they would say, well, all those built-in mechanisms, over the millennia, those things got built up from the very primitive basic cell that we started with in the primordial soup. It's just nonsense.
Now, there's also a time factor here, because if your body reacts to an infection, it's within, I don't know, minutes, hours of the infection, and you're seeing the body react. But in evolution, it takes eons for those changes.
Yes. That's the theory, unless you're talking about punctuated evolution, in which case, things happen very rapidly within a short period of time, and then things settle down again. The thing that is, difficult for evolutionists to, well, there's a lot of things in the biological systems that are very difficult to describe, is that it appears all of this stuff is already built into us, already designed. But we want to make up stories as to we've got, these things had to be built up either in all at once, and then, certain systems got built up all at once, and then things settled down, and then there was another event, and then more systems got built up, and then things settled down. You don't have any way of describing what makes information increase rapidly during certain periods, and then the system is stable, after that point. So the more we delve into the cell and the more disciplines we use in biology, we find that, this is so complex that even the best mathematics are having a difficult time describing biological systems.
Interesting, interesting. It's apparent to me that the design end of this thing is a whole lot more elegant and a whole lot more complex than evolution would have us believe. And
absolutely.
All you gotta do is watch a sunset and see elegance. You know that it's built into the system in one way or another. It's an amazing topic. It's a complex topic. The article again is in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if you'd like to read up. And Institute of Creation Research has many articles that pertain to the biblical story of creation, as does the website creationmoments.com. You might check there too, because they have some tremendous resources. I'm talking about DVDs and printed articles, creationmoments.com. Don Clark, thank you very much. It's been enlightening today. We will check with you next week, okay?
All right. Very good. Y'all have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye.